is hard condensed matter, of course. The other end is soft condensed matter. So today I wish to expose you to a couple of very interesting problems in condensed matter, especially in membrane physics. These problems are equally fundamental in a sense that we can write down Hamiltonian for them. They are also equally entertaining and interesting so that we can define things like order parameter. We can ask the question whether or not they are first order or second order phase transitions and so on and so forth for phase diagrams. And they are also equally challenging in a sense that sometimes you really need to make up some creative approach in order to solve them. I would like to then give a brief introduction to tubular membrane. That's actually related to the first topic. And then I will give you two examples. One is DNA confined in a soft tube. The other is two nanoparticles on top of a soft sheet. These are theoretical problems. You can also ask the question of what will happen if DNA is sitting on top of a sheet, or what will happen if nanoparticles is confined inside a tube. I will not get into those. Membrane. Well, so most of the time when we talk about membrane, we are referring to amphiphilic biological membranes. And here you actually see a bilayer membrane. If you look at these molecules more carefully, each molecule is composed of a head and a tail. The head here is colored blue. The head is hydrophilic, so the head likes water. And the tail is hydrophobic, so they hate water. So what happened is that once they are assembled together, you will see a sheet of material bilayer that is fluctuating, almost like a two-dimensional sheet, but they fluctuate. These molecules can even move around the sheet. Okay, so to the simplest extent, you can think of this as a two-dimensional surface. Now you can wrap these bilayers around. As a normally you will see a sphere coming out of this. So it's a spherical membrane. So you can see that a lot in literature. Now in recent years, several groups have tried to stabilize so-called tubular membrane, membrane that will form tubes. How do you do that? Well, you come in into a spherical, big spherical membrane, pick up one point, and pull it away, okay? There are many ways of doing that. Optical trap, and simply using, you know, tag one monomer there and then pull it away. Or you can put it in extension flow and so on and so forth. But by the end, the product is the same. You have a tube, which in this picture is very thin. And here, it's a much better cutoff. By the end, you have a tube grown from this much bigger sphere, okay? Now, why do you want to do the tube? Because in biological systems, we have a lot of these tubes living in biological systems. So this can be used as a test bed for a lot of interesting things. As well, people have been talking about using membrane tube as a switching device. You can put in stuff inside, block them, and so on and so forth, okay? So that's basically what is happening. And if you look carefully, that part has bilayer because we have cross-section view here. Model-wise, how do we model this? We can write down a Hamiltonian. In mid-60s, there was a Hamiltonian that was written down by Helfrich. And that Hamiltonian has given us the insight into the membrane physics. As a matter of fact, explaining almost most of the membrane physics we see today. All right, so let me go through a very simple, brief version of that that model, a simple explanation for that model. So what you do is that you take part of the surface, two-dimensional surface, I'm going to enlarge it. That's an area element. Out of area element, you can always define delta A, area, big deal. Now, it is a curved surface, so you can define two principal curvatures. From these two principal curvatures, R1 and R2, okay, you can basically describe, together with delta A, you can describe the physical property of this area element. Now, what Helfrich did basically was to introduce two physical parameters. One is called sigma, one is called kappa. You're going to hear a lot of sigma kappa in the next 20 minutes. Sigma is surface tension. So if you have a sheet like this, it will resist stretching. So there is a surface tension to go with this delta A. Kappa is the bending energy. This sheet will prefer to be flat unless you give it a spontaneous curvature. So any way you bend it will come back. That is governed by energy scale called kappa. Two parameters, and the rest is simply geometrical parameters. So Helfrich energy says that for this element, you have delta A times sigma plus kappa, and then here is your bending term. Two terms. This simple model should be, I should say, has equal footing, has equal importance as an Ising model. This simple model has given us a lot of insight into membrane physics with only two parameters. Let's go back to the tube. Well, before that, what kind of order magnitude are we talking about here? Beta kappa has order magnitude of 20. So that gives you a estimate of how rigid this membrane, most biological membrane is. For most biological membrane, it ranges from 15 to 20, okay? Sigma, surface tension. Well, sigma over kappa, sigma times a typical length scale squared, this could be nanometer squared, over kappa, that can go from -10^-3 to 10^3, 6 or 7 orders of magnitude. So sigma changes a lot. Kappa, beta kappa is basically fixed. Beta is 1 over kBT, I'm sorry. All right, so let's see if this theory can be used for a tube. Well, if you look at a tube, there are two curvatures. One is around the cylinder, another is along the cylinder. So you can immediately write down 1 over R1 is 1 over R, and the other one being 0. And you can reduce the Helfrich energy for the entire system into two terms. Your R sits here, and this LR, L is the length of the system, basically give you the area of the surface area of this tube. And with that, you have R minimized with respect to R, give you the preferred or natural radius, R0. You see, R0 is given by kappa over sigma, R0 squared. So it's a very simple argument. As a matter of fact, this works. Now, you may say, well, I want to go beyond that. You talk about tube, just discussed spheres with the tube being poured out. Well, you can look at these two publications where they actually demonstrate, yes, indeed, a tube can be stabilized simultaneously with a much bigger sphere here. Again, a cube can be stabilized with a much bigger sphere here, and the model would work, okay? What I'm interested is a special problem here. That is, we talk about soft tube. I want to dump. I want to see the phase transition when we dump stuff inside. So I need to explain what is Swallow to globulus transition. I need to explain self-avoiding polymer. Basically, we were inspired by an experiment done in Sweden. They put DNA inside the tube. Now, DNA. Most of you know that DNA carries genetic information. As a matter of fact, DNA is much more than that. DNA is a polymer. At a much bigger scale, you will see a self-avoiding polymer. That is, this polymer has a certain radius. It's not going to overlap with each other. So in a sense that a lot of DNA physics can be explained by polymer physics, vice versa, sometimes DNA physics will give us a challenge of looking into more in polymer physics. Okay, so when I say DNA in this talk, basically I mean a self-avoiding work, a self-avoiding polymer. Now, a few years ago, this group in Sweden did the following. You have this big blob of membrane, so they dumped DNA inside, and then they pick it up at one point and pull it out, then you have a cylinder, then you can actually look at DNA, observe DNA, and if they label the DNA by fluorescence with the detector, they should be able to see the intensity coming from this detection, okay? Now, story is that they have seen two different types of intensity signal. One is such that when they scan this region, they saw that the light intensity is constant. The other observation was that in other cases, they would see dark and blip and dark and dark and light up and dark, so that a certain region of this tube would have a signal, and this signal is very strong and actually proportional to DNA length. Very simple experimental observation. So why would these two things, these two observations occur at all? All right? So we will be talking about the physics of self-avoiding polymer confined in a soft tube. Okay, so let's try to understand what will happen if we put a polymer inside a tube. Let's start with a hard tube or rigid tube. You put a polymer inside, the polymer will extend L in this direction. This tube has a radius of R. Through earlier work of De Jong in the 70s, we see that the length L of this polymer is proportional to number of monomers you have in the system and inversely proportional to a power law in R. So the tighter you squeeze, the longer the polymer will go. The longer the polymer, of course, the longer the conformation, okay? So that is a scaling law developed by De Jong and well understood and tested in other systems. So we know that, well, if this is the case, if this is a detector, you observe the system, you should see a constant light intensity, weak but constant, coming out of this. That is an independent but weak. You can go through a simple scaling argument and see that is the case. However, there are other cases, the other observations experimentally, that signal is quite strong and is not continuous. So what is going on? Now let's imagine there could be another phase in the system. That is, you have a long tube, a certain region of this tube would have the entire polymer inside, and this region is comparable, size of the region is comparable to the radius. Let's imagine this could be a phase. Now this phase is called globular phase because all the polymers will be forced into a globular region, all right? Now, if you were to have a detector that has a head size much bigger than this, of course you're gonna see an intensity proportional to the length of the polymer, and if you were to move around, of course you will see the signal in one place, and you wouldn't see any signal in other places. So this could be an explanation, okay? So DNA is in a concentrated region, and the diameter of the tube will dilate it, and so that this calls for us to make up a theory and a simulation to understand this. All right, as a matter of fact, the theory for understanding the transition between two was put forward by Pierre De Jong himself, the late Pierre De Jong, probably as one of his last piece of work. De Jong calls this phase a snake eating a swollen sausage. Of course, that must be French sausage. It's a long, elongated conformation with a slightly deformed tube, okay? De Jong also says that there could be another phase that's globular, and you have the central region confined, the polymer. And he basically went through an exercise of balancing force in the system and came up with this, these two phases. Now, simply put it, I will just simply explain the basics of this De Jong theory. You know, polymer doesn't like to be elongated. It doesn't want to be stretched or confined. So the longer it goes, the more heat. The longer it goes, the polymer will heat the system more, okay? So what will happen is that if you have longer M or squash the polymer free energy-wise will increase tremendously. So as far as the first system goes, the free energy could be high if you have small radius. For the second phase, the polymer can be focused in one region, and that will make this polymer happy. As a matter of fact, this makes membrane unhappy because membrane will like to have a natural radius of R0. We talked about that moment ago. So that is the phase that polymer will be happy. This is the phase that membrane will be happy. This is the phase that polymer will be happy. As a result, you'll have a competition of hatred, basically. So therefore, by the end, there could be a phase transition. So that's the essence of Bayesian theory. As a matter of fact, if you look at his original paper, he came up with four phases, but the essential question is that, do we really have the phase transition? Machev from Mainz, Kirk Binder's group, tried this. So he tried this by doing a Monte Carlo simulation. What he did is the following. He took a carbon nanotube, existing carbon nanotube structure, a simulation package, and made the tube soft, and then he put a polymer inside, then he simulated. And that publication basically concluded that globular transition doesn't exist. Of course, he said it in a much more polite way. He has not observed globular transition. Now, if you look at what he did, his simulation were all wrong, at a short time because it's a very expensive simulation. Basically, you have M times M problem, M being the number of nodes you have in one direction. Okay? And the other thing that they did was that they looked at a relatively short polymer so that they can run the simulation again in a relatively short time. So the challenge here is then running the simulation with a longer polymer and a longer time, okay? So we have to do some trick. Now, as far as this slide goes, I want to explain how Monte Carlo simulation is done in polymer. It's very simple. You pick up a monomer, rotate it, you have a new conformation, then you test whether or not this new conformation is accepted. I would like to mention two very important parameters here. One is bond length, A. Another is number of monomers in the system, N. These are two parameters we will use. And excluded volume parameter, D, which gives us the diameter, which is usually set as A. And you can use a different value, but not important, okay? Now, the essential problem here is that the computation is too expensive. So how do we simplify that? All atoms, that's out of question. You don't have enough computational power for that. You can also go for a simpler version of all atom, but still very expensive. And as a matter of fact, that's what Machev did using network for membrane. And that is good, but you have to play tricks because this monster here will crumple, okay? You have to play tricks in order to maintain that membrane. So when we took up this problem, we thought that we can do something simpler because we already have this nicely written Helfrich energy. Why don't we just simply simulate Helfrich energy? By doing that, we are really simulating system as well, okay? There are only two parameters in there. So what we are gonna do is that we will assume there is a cylindrical symmetry, so we'll ignore the phi angle fluctuation and begin to use rings to represent the system. And if you do that properly, you only have M nodes rather than M square nodes because you only need M rings in one direction. You ignore the other variable, okay? So computationally, how this is done? Well, computationally, all you need to do is to specify the size, the radius of these rings, and you can move the radius of the ring to make the system fluctuate. Based on this radius of these rings, you can write down delta A, the size of a surface element stretched by these rings. You can write down the two curvature, and by the end you plug it in here and you let your computer take care of the rest. So you put this into Monte Carlo machinery and begin to run the system. So it's basically, that's all you need to do. I want to remind you again, parameters in our theory. N, the size of the polymer, kappa and sigma, that describes membrane, and beta, that's inverse temperature. If you look at those, you say they are five parameters. How are we gonna do with the five parameters? Yes. There is a chance that you can find a phase transition with a phantom polymer, but we haven't tested that yet. All right, so five parameters, you say, well, there are five. Actually, if you look at the model more carefully, there are only three. One is N, length of the polymer. The other is a combined beta sigma A squared, A being the bond length. That combination will give you, I have 5 minutes? Okay, well, that combination will give you a dimensionless number, and the other being beta kappa that we will set to about 20 in the remainder of this talk. So basically you have these two. Now I am gonna go through this relatively quickly. We said that we have that fluctuating membrane simulated, so that is under control. I do want to wish to, it's not working. Oh, here. So I do want to wish, I want to show you this animation. As a matter of fact, that's directly from the simulation. So we squeeze this polymer. This small polymer will be elongated along the axis, as you can see, as we squeeze it. But this polymer is fluctuating. It will find a specific moment in the middle, and at a specific moment, this polymer will all collapse into one region. No attraction at all, just simply repulsion. The membrane energy will prefer to have this polymer sitting in the middle. Well, the polymer would like to have this polymer sitting in the middle, but membrane free energy will actually rather to have polymer elongated. Okay, so there is a competition. Anyway, so I've convinced you that this might be simulated. As a matter of fact, we have seen the two states in our simulation, and we can draw the length of the elongation of this polymer in the cylinder as a function of sigma, by which we see a jump. And this jump signals the transition between the two states. If we do more of this, we should be able to identify the transition sigma, and from that we can plot a phase diagram, and that is a phase diagram that is similar to the Jang's original scaling argument. And somewhere along this line you will see a first order transition. So that is basically my story for the first part of the talk. I want to go through the second part very quickly, probably in 2 minutes. Anyway, so for this system we got a lot of scaling behavior. Some of them agree with the Jang theory, some of them disagree with the Jang theory, okay? So as a next topic, which I will probably spend 2 minutes on it, I want to talk about a very simple system, but yet not fully understood. Nanospheres attracted to a flap membrane, okay? So the problem is this. You have a membrane sheet that is fluctuating. You might have two nanoparticles. This could be real nanoparticles, colloids and so on. It could be also just simply virus particle, biologically virus particle. They could be coated such that this particle can interact with the membrane, but yet these particles don't have an interaction between them. The question is that, then what will happen? Of course, if there is attraction between these particles and the membrane surface, the particles will be attracted to the surface, and then we would have questions following that, such as, would these attracted particles attract each other, or would they repel each other? And this attraction repulsion are basically mediated by membrane. Okay, what you will see is that membrane will deform, and they will actually experience the indirect attraction or repulsion. So that's another very interesting system. We have worked on this problem and come up with a phase diagram, which I will briefly show here. That's W is attraction between the nanoparticle and membrane. Again, we have this frame sigma here. You can actually see three states. One is a free state, not attracted. Another is absorbed state with repulsion mediated by membrane. Another state is absorbed state with attraction mediated by membrane. You can draw a phase diagram. You can ask, you know, make physical argument why they are so. And there is a corner of this phase diagram where we have new theory and simulation from other group, but yet not understood yet from the current model. Okay, I want to summarize. So we have developed a useful computational method that can be used to tackle some of the membrane physics problem, some problems in membrane physics. And for this tubular problem, we have demonstrated, yes, indeed, the Degen's prediction is correct, and no, Degen's scaling theory has wrong exponent. And for the flat surface problem, we have also demonstrated that there could be repulsion mediated by membrane and attraction mediated by membrane. That actually solved a long-standing problem in this topic, because when people make different approximations, here we're doing exact solution, so to speak. When people make different approximations, sometimes they see attraction, sometimes they see repulsion, okay? I would like to conclude by saying that this membrane, this nanoparticle and membrane problem is actually a general relativity in 2+1 dimension problem, if you think about it. Thank you. I've ignored, you mean the angular dependence in the ring? Yes, I will ignore that. I believe that's a safe assumption, a safe approximation, because after all, you're talking about deformation in radius, not in angular dependence. So yeah, we have made the approximation. I believe that is a safe approximation. Simplify our life by, I don't know, two orders of magnitude as a matter of fact. The computation can be speeded up 100 times.
Hi, Jeff. What are the interactions between the polymer and the membrane? Is it just some sort of soft or hard repulsion?
I can't hear you, Don.
The interactions between the membrane and the polymer.
Yeah.
What type of interactions are those?
Okay, the interaction in my first problem, the interaction between membrane and polymer is simply a confinement interaction. There is no attraction. You may say there is a repulsion. It's a confinement repulsion. It's a rigid, step function, or delta, whatever, kind of confinement. So there is no direct, there's no soft interaction between these two. So in that first problem, there is simply no attraction at all. But yet you see globular state developing. That's actually the interesting part of that problem. It's purely a constraint, yes. That's a good question. Yeah, if you take a slice along, if you take, you cut your tube, begin to make slices, you don't see perfect shape. You will have some fluctuation of the membrane. To see that fluctuation, you indeed need to put in angular dependence. We haven't gone that far yet.